Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now, let's get to it. Hey, are you looking to expand and grow your business? Are you looking for that edge, that next step up, that paradigm shift? Well, one of the best ways to get you there is through a mentor or a coach. And today's sponsor, Trevor McGregor, he is the man. He's going to get you to be laser focused, to get you onto that next level. And I know from experience dealing with Trevor, he is a master coach, peak performance coach, well over 10,000 coaching hours through clients all over the world. And he helps you achieve better health, more wealth and freedom and contribution than you ever thought possible. Have that coach that holds your feet to the fire. Go on to Trevor's website, coachwithtrevor.com. Again, it's coachwithtrevor.com. And there you can get a free strategy session with Trevor. And you can decide if he's the right fit for you and you're the right fit for him. Again, it's coachwithtrevor.com. You will not be disappointed. Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer, and with me, I'm excited to have Michael Blanc on the show. Michael, how are you doing today?
Hey, Todd, what's going on?
So, Michael, you are a multifamily investor, a podcaster, and all kinds of stuff. So why don't you tell my audience who you are and what you got going on?
Yeah, so today I'm a full-time apartment building investor, but what I'm even more jazzed about is helping others do the same, becoming financially free with real estate, but maybe not in the way that they think, which is normally single-family houses, but we do it with with apartment buildings. And so, you know, last year we helped students do, I think it was 775 units that we helped buy yesterday, and four of those we actually did in joint ventures with our students. So I'm really excited about the program that we've created and the platform and the joint venture program. So I'm just kind of measuring, you know, my own success and how many people I can help do their first deals. Because I know if I can help you do your first deal, you're literally 2 to 3 years away from quitting your job, which is what most people want to do. So that's really what I'm excited about.
Cool. Well, that's awesome. I've heard a little bit about it on your podcast. You've talked a little bit about what you're doing there. So explain to me and my audience a little bit more. What do you mean? You talked about you have done some joint ventures. So what do you mean by what you're doing there? Explain that.
Yeah. So we have a program. It's an online training course called the Ultimate Guide to Buying Apartment Buildings with Private Money. And there's a support program behind that that allows people to get feedback on their analysis. So at the heart of getting your skill level and your confidence level up is to be able to analyze deals so that you can make offers. So we have some support for that where you can upload your analysis and get feedback. And through that process, we also allow people to submit deals to us for partnering. So the idea is we only tell students, look, you know, you're looking for your first deal, whatever size. It could be a 5-unit, 10-unit, but keep your eyes open, you know, as you're beating the bushes for something bigger. Maybe it's a 75, 150 unit. If you find something like that, you already know how to analyze it, right? You can list us as an advisor on your advisor board. You get some credibility there. So why not go ahead and try to make an offer and try to pre-negotiate that offer? And if you can get to that point where you've analyzed it appropriately, like we teach, and you're already negotiating around a number that makes sense, then bring it to us, right? Then we have a series of coaching calls that get it to the point where we can get a letter of intent signed and a contract signed. And at that point, we work out a joint venture with a student, and we keep that person as a general partner, and we have a methodology for working out what the split is. Sure. So I wouldn't say a primary thing, because I really care about that people learn how to raise money and do stuff themselves. But again, if you're looking for a 20 unit, your chances are you're going to stumble across a 96 unit, and instead of passing on it, just take a swing at it, and then, you know, bring it to us, and we'll raise the money for you.
So you're going to help these, that's fantastic. So you basically you're going to train them how to buy multifamily. And then if they've got a deal that they can't take down themselves, they can come to you, present the deal, the numbers work. You guys will partner with them to get the deal done and get them their first deal out of the gates.
Yeah, that's right. We did four deals like that last year, totaling just over 500 units were joint venture deal. And those were three, four, five different students that we kind of put together in deals. So it's a very exciting program. I'm really excited about it. I think it's unique in the world. It's complicated to pull off. There's a lot of things that we evolved last year to make it smoother.
Yeah.
Setting expectations properly. You know, not every deal that people submit we're going to take, right? That doesn't mean though that you shouldn't do a deal. Like, you know, like you did your first deal. Well, it wasn't a smoking hot deal, but it was still a first deal. So just because we won't accept it, we're looking for the cream of the crop of the deal. It doesn't mean you shouldn't go out and still do the deal, even if that doesn't meet our, you know, return criteria. So it's just another way. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to help people do their first deal, whatever that means. If you listen to my podcast and you're inspired, you go out and do a deal. That's awesome. I love that. Right. If you pay thousands of dollars in our coaching program, you do your first deal. That's great. If you come on board as a general partner, that's great. Right. So whatever I can do to do your first deal, because that first deal, it's so critical, right? It literally, I call it the law of the first deal. It's like once that domino falls, the second and third come to you in rapid, almost automatic succession. You'd almost have to expend more energy not to do the second or third, because you become like this deal magnet, this money magnet. And it's all hinged on that first deal. And so that's why I'm really excited about that first deal. I used to be a little bit like, you know, you should go, you know, go big or go home. You know, why would you want to do a duplex? What a waste of time. But now in studying this I'm writing a book on it also, that even though the duplex may not be a meaningful step in towards your end goal, if you're trying to place $20,000 per month in income, it still triggers the law of the first deal. It's incredible. So before you kind of throw your hands up, go, you know, this is too big, too complicated for me, and you know, I'm going to try to push you in the comfort zone. But if I can't do that, and before you walk away, you know, giving up, I'd rather you do a duplex than anything else, because it's still that powerful first deal.
Yeah, I like that. If you're too scared to do a 20 unit deal, which you shouldn't be, but if you're too scared to do it, if you just whatever, some sort of mindset trigger doesn't allow you to do it, then do that duplex and get the deal done, and then do the 20 unit or then do the 100 unit deal. I love that. So let's rewind even farther. Talk to us about, you know, how did you first, or, you know, where did you come from? How did you first decide that you're going to be an apartment investor and get into the space?
Well, I have a background like a lot of people. I was never surrounded by entrepreneurs. My dad was with IBM for 35 years.
Yeah.
You know, so I just went to school. I ended up getting a degree in computer science, got a master's in computer science. I'm highly educated, Todd, highly educated, super smart, you know, woo. And then just went on that route and was a programmer. I guess my first experience with more of an entrepreneurial environment was when I joined a software startup, and that was the right place in the right time. We went IPO'd in March 2000 and put a bunch of money in my pocket, and it was great. I stayed with the company way too long. All the fun people had already left. We got big and then got bought out. And then I was going to go out on my own. And then I read Rich Dad Poor Dad in 2004, and I was like, God, I am such an idiot. Like, it doesn't matter how much money I have in the bank or how much money I'm earning. It's how much passive income am I deriving from? And I had made a really small investment in a restaurant franchise development company, and they just would send me checks every month. And I said, you know what? I need more of that. So I followed Robert Kiyosaki's advice. I need a cash flow business and real estate, and not necessarily, you know, it doesn't have to be the same. So for the cash flow business, because I knew a few other franchisees with a burger chain that was very successful, and they're like, oh yeah, it's going to cost this much to open. You're going to hire it. We're going to hire a guy who's going to run everything, and then we're going to sit back and count the passive income. I'm like, sweet, that's what I want. I figured I had enough money to finance like three restaurants. So I got full bore into the pizza restaurant, but I signed up with a different franchise and got into the restaurant. But that was my big idea, Todd. It was not real estate. It was restaurants, but I was seeking financial freedom. I wanted to permanently check the box off. I figured I could probably coast for a few years just living off my savings. That didn't really appeal to me, because then I had to go back to work. So I was like, I'll just put this to work. And I also got started real estate. I flipped some houses, and I actually took an apartment building boot camp. This was back in 2007, and I spent 9 months looking for apartments in Texas. And I finally had a verbal agreement on an 82-unit in College Station, Texas. And I was like, this is sweet. And it was a smoking hot deal, because I had looked at like 175 deals before then. It was really frustrating. And then I finally said, look, I'm going to put this on hold, because we were at that point we had three restaurants, and they were taking up all my time. And then the recession hit, kicked my ass a little bit. And on the restaurant side, luckily I wasn't holding any real estate. And in 2009, things kind of stabilized a little bit. And I, like you, I saw the single family house market, just the gap between foreclosure and retail was so wide. I was like, my gosh, I need to get into house flipping. So I got into house flipping. But the problem is I deployed all my money in these restaurants because that was my big idea. Like I went all in, like this, all the chips are on the table. Now, the restaurants did not turn out so well. To make a long story short, I lost about 95% of my net worth through that experiment. But the real estate always worked very well. And I got into an apartment building a little bit like you through accident. It was a 12-unit. Didn't start off well at all. And I was like, my gosh, I think this was a mistake. And we just sold it a month ago for a very healthy profit. But it was 6 years after I bought it. It just righted it. But the first 2 years were a disaster. I mean, everything that could have gone wrong literally went wrong. And I was like, this is this maybe not the best thing I could have done. But once it got stabilized, this was now in 2012 or so, you know, checks just started coming in. And I was flipping houses and was making good money. We were flipping we did about 36 houses in 2.5 years. And then the market kind of dried up a little bit. So I was making good money. And I read all the books. So I had all the systems in place. But it was still, if I'm not buying, fixing, or selling, I'm not making money. And then when I sold it, there was no residual from it. I'm like, this is insanity. Like, if I want to replace $10,000 of income, I would have had to buy and hold 50 houses. And you know what that's like. I've never actually, I skipped that mentally. I was like, no, I'm not doing, that. Yeah, I'm not doing that. So I was like, man, gosh, multifamily. That's it. Like, it's that one building. I was like, you know what? In real estate, all I got to do is just do more of that. And I started raising money and doing more deals. And then I started blogging about it. And it kind of took on a life of its own. And I've always been a teacher. Like, I've always loved teaching. I never really thought it would amount to really anything until I started blogging and people started getting really interested. And I sensed that people really were looking to real estate to help them quit their jobs, become financially free. You know, that's where everybody goes to the RIA meetings every single month, but they're thinking single family houses. And if they just did an exercise like I did, I'm like, how many houses would you need to actually quit your job? It would take you a long time. Then it would be really hard to manage and it would take forever to sell. Right. So I'm, you know, but then people dismiss apartment buildings because they think it's an advanced strategy. And let me get a 5 to 10 years of experience. And then I'll take the money from that and I'll roll it into apartment buildings. And at that point, I already knew that wasn't true. I was like, you know what? More people need to know about this. So that's kind of my message to the millions is you don't need to do a bunch of years of single family houses. And, you know, you've gone through it. You know firsthand what it's like because you've done a lot more house flips than I have. And you're like, you know what? This is kind of insane. And we can actually short circuit that a little bit. So I'm excited about that.
Cool. Well, that's awesome. So you started syndicating. So how did you decide that you're going to start syndicating and where did you get your initial investors? And then how did you continue to grow that list?
Well, my first set of initial investors I got through the house flips because when I said in 2009, I wanted to get into house flips. I felt like I needed to take advantage of the market, but I didn't have any more capital. So I just started talking to people about it. I was like, you know, we're going to get into house flips. Here's what I'm seeing in a market, huge opportunity. And then someone says, sure, I'm in for $50,000. And I'm like, oh my gosh, someone's dumb enough to want to invest with me, you know? And I was like, okay, well, let me try that again. And then and then a second person was like, you know, it was a 6 month hold, 12% simple interest. And it was really simple. And it was, it blew my mind, Todd. I mean, I was like, holy cow, let me get this straight. I'm not limited by my own limited financial resources. I just got to find deals and find the money and put them together. And that was a huge light bulb for me. So that building I bought, the 12 unit, the same way, that was a true syndication. It was a little small for syndication, but I wanted to try it, right? So I hired the SEC attorney and did a pre-PM and had five investors in there at $50,000 each. And it was, from that perspective, it just worked great. Because once I saw the light bulb go off, I'm like, my gosh, I'm just going to start raising money. Now, what I found interesting is of the 30 investors or so I had for the house flips, only two came over on the multifamily side because my minimums were a little higher. They were, most of them were uncomfortable and you know, deploying their money for more than 6 months. There was a combination of things. And I just found there was just another example where I thought, you know, I could graduate from the single family house thing and it would just give me a leg up. And it wasn't. like none of my, hardly any of my investors came with me. I had to learn all, you know, learn how to raise the money from scratch. And when I told brokers that I flipped 36, you know, three dozen houses, they're like, yeah, but how many multifamily have you done? I'm like, well, none, but look at all the houses I flipped. They're like, no, you're an idiot. You're a newbie, right? Come talk to me when you have some track record. And I didn't know this, so I didn't have a team behind me. I thought it was just me. And so I got like no credit for the single family house I've done. It boggled my mind.
Yeah, I get the same thing. I mean, yeah, I flipped 150 houses. Oh, wow, that's really impressive. But it doesn't mean anything to them as far as multifamily. Like,
unbelievable, right? It's so counterintuitive.
Yeah, exactly. So then how did you build, so you got your first investors, then how did you build that investor kind of base? How did you grow that?
Well, I grew it out of my program. So my idea was, and maybe I was thinking bigger at the time, it like almost seems like it kind of grows from there. But I was really thinking that I was really envisioning this platform, right? Where people would be able to know how to find deals, analyze deals, make offers. And then we would then connect with people who had money, but on a much grander scale, and then connect the two and with me somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
Right. And so I thought about this and I thought, I don't think this exists anywhere else. And so I just started to kind of work towards that. And that finally launched in late 2016 with this program I just kind of just described a little bit, primarily educational, but also some joint venturing and stuff like that. And when we closed our first deal last April, it was awesome because I had worked for like 3 years towards putting this thing together. And then finally it had come to fruition. Yeah. And it's really exciting now because the scale of it, the impact that we can make with it is much, much broader, right? So we can literally impact hundreds of people who are perfectly capable of maybe finding deals and analyzing deals, making offers, but maybe they don't have all the money to do a big deal, right? So maybe we can help them in that sense. Or you have a high net worth individual and we're trying to connect you with a pipeline of deals, and now we have that as well, right? So we're engaging with the passive investor as well. And so that was kind of my strategy is kind of doing this on a much larger level. So we did, you know, a little bit over 500 units, 527 units last year, and hopefully we'll do 1,000 units. I know you want to do close to 1,000 units yourself. So seems like a good goal.
Well, and you're going to probably find out that your law of the first deal works in this aspect as well. I mean, you guys did your first deal. You've done a bunch of them now. You're going to probably do at least double, if not more than that, this year as well. So
the challenge is keeping up, right? And I think you're hitting that as well. When you reach a certain scale, you're like, oh my gosh, I have a whole different problem now. You know, I can manage 15 investors, but managing 100 investors, that's a totally different, you know, different and totally different game as well. You know, one deal at a time, but two deals at a time. How do I deal with that? Three deals at a time. So it's forcing me to kind of put a little more of a corporate cap on, going, okay, what kind of structure do we need here, right? And if I want to keep up with people, how do I make sure I raise enough money, right? Because we raised $3.4 million for the last deal. Okay, well, what if I have another three deals like that or four deals like that? How am I going to keep up with that, right? It's a good problem to have. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying, and once we publicize that first deal, you know, people, the floodgates kind of opened and people started bringing us all kinds of deals. And, you know, at one point we got to say, okay, hold on, we can't handle it right now, which is a good problem to have, but it's still a problem, right? So we're, you know, kind of dealing with how do we achieve more massive scale? You know, how could we do 5,000 units per year? I mean, what would that look like?
So that leads me to a couple questions. Let's first talk about, you know, how are you able to, what systems, processes have you been putting into place to help scale, you know, any aspect of your business?
So it really depends on where you are, right? Because I have bootstrapped stuff from nothing, right? Because we don't have any revenue coming in. Well, you can't hire a virtual assistant. Like, oh, hire your search. Yeah, but with what money? How am I going to do that, right? So you have to look at where you are in the business and figure out what is the most appropriate balanced thing that you need to grow. Like on the one hand, when you're just starting out, you don't have any means to hire someone, right? You want to delegate. So everybody, okay, I want to delegate so I can grow, right? So, okay, but if you don't have any money coming in, then how are you going to hire that virtual assistant? So that's challenge number one, which means now you have to bootstrap. You have to do everything yourself until the point where you got money coming in. Well, now the next hurdle is, you have money coming in, and you could make more money by continuing doing what you're doing because you're not paying anyone. And that's at the point where things start plateauing off again because there's only so many hours in a day. So a lot of people can't get past that sole member employee because they're not comfortable in bringing someone else on. Because truth is, Todd, there's no one that can do the job better than you can. There's clearly, I mean, I'm the best guy for the job, right? So that now means I have to bring someone else on, and it's going to take me a while to train that person. They're going to be unproductive for the next 3 months. That's going to take me more time to help show that person how to do the same damn thing that I just did in 5 minutes. And I don't really like that idea a lot. So,
and you got to pay them, right?
Well, and you got to pay them for all this stuff. Now, the truth of the matter is if you get past that, all of a sudden you take off the more menial tasks someone else is doing, right? You always go look at what your hourly rate is. So you take your revenue that you're bringing in and you're dividing it by your number of hours you're working on a job, and you can calculate your hourly rate. So if your hourly rate is $50 an hour, well, why would you, you know, then why not spend delegate to someone who's $15 an hour and have them do the $15 job? And that then opens you up to spend more on the $50 per hour stuff. And there's certain things you can't delegate, or at least not now. So I'm constantly looking around going, okay, what can I delegate and what shouldn't I delegate? Like sometimes I've delegated too soon, which is another problem. Delegate too soon and you take the eye off the ball, and it kind of bites you in the butt because you're not really paying attention, because either you don't have the right person in place or you haven't trained them properly. They don't quite understand what you're doing yet. They're not, you know, they don't really know what you're doing yet. So that you shouldn't drop them in the deep end quite yet, right? But the point is I'm constantly figuring out who can I bring in on the team. And what then would I spend my time on doing? What is that higher revenue producing activity? And I say revenue producing, it's really how can I make a bigger impact on people, right? Is it me editing the podcast, right? Is that a good use of my time? Or is it maybe spreading the message and getting on other people's podcasts, for example, right? Just as an example. And so what I'm trying to say is you try to figure out what you can delegate at every juncture in the middle. And you're just very intentional about that. Just always think, what can I delegate? What makes sense to do?
Yeah, great answer. So let's talk about, you know, what's one of the biggest mistakes that you've made, and how have you learned from it?
Well, the biggest painful mistake was getting into restaurants, but it was probably a combination of mistakes. There's some things I couldn't have done anything about, like the recession, the concept that I signed up with, and I can't beat myself over that. But there's a few things I probably could have done differently. One is I was very eager to deploy my funds. So if you have any kind of money, you get an inheritance, or you just have some savings or whatever, you know, that and a money just sitting there not earning anything, and you're dying to have passive income so you can be permanently financially free. I'm like, what is the fastest thing I can do to get there? Like, I don't want to wait 5 years. So I felt this great urge to deploy the funds. I also made some passive investments that went bad. I just want to get stuff done quickly. And the other one is I didn't really have a mentor. I mean, if you're doing something strategic with your life, like if you're going to lose weight or you want to quit smoking or something, you know, obviously education is key. But I didn't really have a mentor. Now I did find an operating partner who was very, very experienced with the restaurant business, but he wasn't a mentor, right? A mentor would have said, you know, hold your horses for a second. Let's take a look at this concept you're signing up with. How does the average franchisee actually perform, right? The references they always give you, the top five performers who are just killing it, right? But what is the average franchisee, right? What is it? Let's look at this in the place in the market a little bit more. And why don't we just go a little slower. I mean, I was just, you know, full bore, full steam ahead. And that's something that a mentor or a coach probably would have warned me about, and I would have listened. I don't know, you know, is probably alignment, especially if I'm going to deploy, if I'm doing something so fundamental in my life. You know, if you're going to change your life in such a fundamental way, it really helps to have someone around you that's kind of been there, that has done that, yeah, and has a little more perspective. I mean, up to this point, I had not lost any money at all. And the other thing, I never considered the downside. Like when you're signing leases, or when you're flipping a house, or when you're buying an apartment building, you don't ever consider the downside. Well, what happens if this thing goes bad? What happens? How's my lease constructed? What happens to the investors? What happens to me? What happens to my house? Right? So you don't think of these things because you're always thinking, well, nothing can ever go wrong. Right? And so not that you become pessimistic, you just kind of look at it from a more well-rounded perspective.
Yeah, you become educated and knowledgeable. And then the other thing is you understand the value of that money. You know, when you get it so quick, I think that's a big problem is people get that money quick and they don't view that as their money almost. It's like, it's just this big pot of money we all of a sudden got. You know, that happens a lot with inheritance, and obviously with people that win lottery, they lose it so quick. And it's because most people don't let it just sit in their bank account and see that I've got, you know, X amount of money. And once you have X amount of money in your bank account for, you know, a good length of time, you expect that money to be there. And so I think that's interesting to hear, you know, you talk about that. So, so what are some goals moving forward that you're going to be doing? You've talked about this, this kind of educational business and what else are your goals?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of is related to that. I just feel, you know, I feel strongly about helping people become financially free, because I think all right. So in order to kind of think about more than success, maybe a life of significance or a life of purpose or anything like that, it's very difficult to do that. Not impossible, but very difficult to do that when you're working 50 plus hours a week. And, you know, I've had conversations with people, you know, hey man, you should really, you know, live into your passion. Why are you working a job you hate? And it's like, what, Michael, what are you talking about, man? I'm doing this providing for my family. I don't know what other choice I have. You know, what are you talking about? You know, living a life of passion and purpose. You know, you're out of, you know, so you have to address the finances, right? You address the finances by reducing your living expenses and figuring out how to do passive income. Yeah. So, and I've observed this with people who have, who are financially free, and it shifts their entire mind because they're doing stuff now, not because they have to, but because they want to. And many people, not immediately, but they figure out it's actually about serving people. Yep. It's because I already have my success. So that's, you know, I've kind of done that. And now what else is there in life? You know, and we start finding fulfillment in serving other people. And my, you know, if a 50 plus hour job is preventing someone from making the world a better place, that's a problem. Right. And so in where I'm sitting from, you know, I would, you know, you sign up with a Dave Ramsey course and you reduce your living expenses and debt. You should definitely do that. But on the income generating side, there's nothing better than real estate. And within real estate, there's nothing better than multifamily, even if you start with a duplex. And I think if someone who wants to be financially free with real estate, there's only one thing from in my mind, because I've done literally every real estate strategy there is except for ground up development. And that's multifamily. And the good news for me and others is that you can do it without any kind of track record and without any of your own money, which I didn't know before either. And so I just think that's something that real estate investors just need to know about. So that's what I'm really excited about is just increasing the impact that we can make off the stuff we've done. And, you know, it seems like, you know, helping 1,000 people become financially free is not a bad goal. So, and all that starts with a first deal, because once they do their first deal, they don't need me anymore. They're off to the races. They're going to do their second or third, and they're done. I mean, it usually takes 3 deals, and shoot, you've done it as well. And they keep getting progressively bigger. And after 3 deals, they're like, they're done. And you can sit on the beach, or you can keep doing it, whatever you want to do. And I just think that's extremely powerful.
Yeah, and most people are going to want to keep on doing it because it's so much fun.
Yes, yes, it is.
So, what's your favorite book?
Aside from Rich Dad, Poor Dad, I don't know if I have a favorite book. I read constantly. I'll probably read a book or more a month. So,
what are you reading right now then that you're enjoying?
I'm reading a non-business book right now, so it's going to be a little less relevant. It's about the rites of passage for boys. So, you know, how boys become men. So that's not really that relevant. I think the most recent book that I really enjoyed, I almost think I read it twice, was The One Thing by Gary Keller.
Sure.
Which kind of articulated things that I was already doing a little bit, but not with, it didn't bring it to the forefront of consciousness, right? So when you're just focusing on what, you know, what's the one thing that if you could do would make everything else easier or even unnecessary?
Yeah.
And that's pretty cool. That's a great question to ask.
Yeah.
And then how do you block off time so that you can make progress towards that goal? And so that was that was a pretty cool recent book that I had read.
Okay, cool. So last question before we wrap up is, what is your definition to the secret of financial freedom?
Deciding that you want financial freedom. I was about to say multifamily, but it's real much more fundamental than that. Yeah. It's really deciding. I found that people who don't take action are not successful, or the people who actually have decided that they don't really want something, because their current life ain't so bad, right?
Yeah.
Why change something? So it's really, and on the other hand, people who have decided, fundamentally decided, all of a sudden there can be no other outcome but that what they've already decided. It's like this universal principle, and they have no choice but to take action, and the universe has no choice but to give that which they've already decided to be true. It sounds really frou-frou, but now I've observed it now more and more in me and other people, and it really comes down to deciding what someone really wants. It's that fundamental. And then you do multifamily.
Well, and I think, you know, when you talk about deciding, it's not just that you're going to just say it, right? You don't just say it. You have to actually truly decide it, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's got to be within you. It's got to consume you. That's the decision that you're talking about. It's not just,
that's right,
I'm going to buy multifamily. Well,
now it's much more fundamental than that. And normally it's an emotional trigger. It's like, my daughter, you know, I can't go to my daughter's rehearsal tomorrow, and she started crying. You know, it's like, I just got laid off of my job, or whatever. It's typically at a much visceral, emotional level where someone says, enough is enough. This cannot go on anymore.
Yeah. It has to be able to consume you.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, you know, I appreciate you coming on the show. I actually had a lot of fun because I love talking about multifamily, which obviously you're passionate about. And I love talking about mindset and stuff like that, that you've hit on a lot. So appreciate you coming on the show and spending time with us. How do people get in touch with you? I'm sure going to want to learn a lot more about what you got going on. So how can they get in touch with you?
Yeah. I mean, one of the first things I think, especially financial freedom, multifamily is the art of learning money. So I think, one next step would be for people to grab my free ebook. It's called The Secret to Raising Money for Your First Apartment Building Deal.
Okay.
And you can get it at themichaelblanc.com. /ebook. So it's the and then my name, michaelblanc.com, themichaelblanc.com. And then there's a, you know, if you were interested in multifamily, I would just consume all of my podcasts and YouTube videos and blog articles and just see if it's right for you. And if it is, just take the next step, educate yourself. I offer some programs, but there's others out there, and then generally just get into it. So
where can they get to your podcast?
Yeah, just search for Apartment Building Investing Podcast, or just go to themichaelblanc.com, and there's a link to all the episodes. They can download it in their browser or on iTunes as well.
Cool. Awesome. Well, Michael, I really appreciate you spending time with us, and you have a fantastic rest of the day.
Thank you so much, Todd. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Hey, I want to thank Michael Blanc for coming on the show and talking to us about what he's got going on and exciting things that he's doing. So appreciate him sharing with us what he's doing and how he's helping really tons of people out in a positive way. So three things that I took away from this interview. One is, make sure you do your first deal, get that first deal done, and do it the way that you planned on doing it. So if you've got a plan to invest in apartment buildings, buy your first apartment building and make sure you don't hesitate and wait too long. So buy that first deal. And as Michael talks about, he says it's the law of the first deal and law of attraction, right? If you buy one apartment building, you're going to go and buy a second, a third, and a fourth. And it's that snowball effect. It just becomes ultimately a lot easier and quicker to go. So great advice from him there. The next one is, be purposeful with your investing. Don't just invest to invest. He didn't say that necessarily verbatim, but I took that from his conversation about when he got that lump of money. And he's talking about, he invested in this restaurant business. He did some other investments that didn't make any money. And he was just looking to deploy capital as quickly as possible without really thinking carefully about it. And there's a difference between, jumping in too quick and analysis paralysis. So you want to make sure that you are prepared and educated, but you also want to make sure that you, again, like he said, do your first deal. So, but he got that money. He just wanted to deploy it. And when, if you end up for any reason getting that type of money, or a big chunk, or you've got investors that are interested in investing with you, instead of going quickly and just getting something done right away without that knowledge and that education, you've got to step back, really think about it, and make sure you're making an educated and informed decision. So great advice there. And then the last thing is decide. And he talked about deciding, you know, really what you want and where you're going, and making sure that your decision is, you know, true. I mean, a true decision, not just I'm going to do this, but this is my burning desire. This is my burning passion, and this is what's going to happen. So once you decide, you're going to move forward in that, and you're not going to quit. So, awesome interview with Michael. I really love talking with other apartment investors that are doing the same thing as me. That's always fun interviews for me in a selfish way. So appreciate him coming on the show. You can reach him at themichaelblanc.com. You can get his free ebook at themichaelblanc/ebook. And we'll have that in the show notes so you can go directly to his webpage. Check out his podcast too. You can go right on to his webpage, themichaelblanc.com, and click on his podcast, or just search for him in iTunes or wherever you're listening, and you'll find it as well. And Blanc is B-L-A-N-K. You can reach him. So appreciate him being on the show, and I hope you got a ton of value from this episode. Make every day a Saturday. Hey, are you looking to expand and grow your business? Are you looking for that edge and that next step up, that paradigm shift? Well, one of the best ways to get you there is through a mentor or a coach. And today's sponsor, Trevor McGregor, he is the man. He is going to get you to be laser focused, to get you onto that next level. And I know from experience dealing with Trevor, he is a master coach, peak performance coach, well over 10,000 coaching hours, through clients all over the world. And he helps you achieve better health, more wealth and freedom and contribution than you ever thought possible. Have that coach that holds your feet to the fire. Go on to Trevor's website, coachwithtrevor.com. Again, it's coachwithtrevor.com. And there you can get a free strategy session with Trevor. And you can decide if he's the right fit for you and you're the right fit for him. Again, it's coachwithtrevor.com. You will not be disappointed.